Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast, which teaches you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in very sunny Boulder, Colorado. Right next to me on the other couch is Mr. Scott Fliegelman. We are here at Boulder Pickleball. Scott, how are you, bud?
I'm doing great. Just came off the court with a couple of outstanding players. We had a little semi-private lesson, and I'm anxious to talk about pickleball with you guys.
I love it. Today, we're going to talk about something that was recommended by a listener, Sluggo Route, on Instagram, Carlo, I believe his name is, who said, can we talk about how to come back from a big deficit, and then also how to close games out when you're up, which I think we've all been there. We've all had those moments where we're down, you know, 9-2, and we've got to do something about that. And or we're up 10-5, and we cannot seem to end the game. So today we're going to talk about some strategies we have to deal with both of those circumstances.
Yeah, I've been in both situations. Let me lead off with a quick comeback story.
Okay.
My first major tournament, Tournament of Champions 2019, I'm playing singles. Second round, I'm down 13-3. So second round meaning I'm in the loser's bracket.
Right.
I'm down 13-3. And this thing's almost over. And, you know, I guess one of the lessons that I take from that was I scraped out 3 or 4 points in a row, and then it got easy because, boy, the pressure seemed to get much more on his shoulders. I was playing loose. You could just see from his facial expression, his body language, the pressure was just mounting on him. And I cruised right back to 13 all. I lose the serve. He goes and wins the point. He's up 14-13. I call timeout.
Sure.
We come out of the timeout, and Byron was the referee. I remember this well. And Byron says, time in, and my guy serves. He didn't say the score yet. He just said time in. And the guy was so nervous.
Right.
14-13 serving for the match.
Yeah.
That he serves the ball. And at the time, that was a fault.
Right.
Ball comes back to me. I win 3 points in a row and take the thing 16-14.
Wow.
My takeaway from that was you don't have to think about how do I win 10, 11, 12 points.
Right.
I say win 2 or 3 or 4 and things get easier and easier from there.
Right. We've all been on the other side of it where you were up big and we think, oh, this is, I'm done. We're great. And then all of a sudden it's 13-13.
Yeah. Or you've lost a few in a row and you start thinking about, man, if I blow this one.
Right. Right.
So when you're down, just win 3 or 4 and things will get easier for you.
So I think the first thing to think about when you are coming back is how far down the rabbit hole are you before you say, we've got to change the thing we're doing right now. Because theoretically, you've walked into this match with some sort of strategy. There's got to be a point when you turn to each other and go, what we're doing isn't working. So for you, what is that point?
That point is a 4 or 5 point delta. We're now losing by 4 or 5 points.
Okay.
I don't like to let it get any further than
it's 5-1, it's 6-1 or whatever.
Yeah, 0-4, 0-5. We get 2 timeouts. I really don't feel like we need to take those with us because you can't. Into the next game. I even have a friend of mine, Carson, who says you get 2 timeouts and you've got 2 shoes with shoelaces.
Right.
And you can always stop and tie those shoes.
Sure.
And slow things down and the refs don't stop you for that. So use those timeouts.
It's funny you say that. I was in San Clemente watching a senior pro match and a ball had come off the court right at me. And I was about to throw it back, and the guy was like, don't touch that ball. Like, he wanted that extra few seconds of breathing to take a mini timeout in that moment.
I was in an exhibition singles match with Georgia Johnson, which was a fun challenge.
Yeah.
I came from Colorado. I was in the heat of Florida for half an hour before I'm on the court with Georgia. Same thing. The ball rolled under the chairs of the spectators, and they all wanted to grab it. And I said, I will go retrieve that ball myself. Right. I need every breath I can get here.
Exactly. My 160 BPM needs to drop a little bit. So you're in the timeout. You're down a little bit. What are you discussing? What's on the game plan at this point?
I like to really try to discuss with my partner, what is the optimal point construction where we win most of the rallies? Mm. And there's really two. There's the short, fast, powerful points like shake and bake and other ways that we construct really short rallies where we put the ball away. Or we're looking to drag it out, long, slow, molasses, dinking, the ball bouncing a lot. Usually one of those two is favorable for us when we assess our strengths and weaknesses versus their strengths and weaknesses. And quite likely, the last several rallies have gone differently than planned.
Ben and Colin Johns are obviously very famous for dragging people into their gameplay style of slow and methodical and dinking and that kind of thing. And the times we've seen them challenged, last year, Matt Wright and Riley Newman, all they were was power. They just kept trying to end the points early, speed up whenever they could, and it gave the Johns some trouble. Now, I'm sure they've adapted since then, but when you are with an opponent that is known for a thing and you give them the opposite of what they're known for, it could be effective for sure.
And here's a specific example. We've talked about the fourth shot that doesn't get much respect on this show. And if we're down, it's quite likely they're serving. So we come out and we hit a return a serve. And let's say it's in our favor, like the Johns brothers, to make the ball bounce, to slow things down, to draw the rally out. If they drive a third at me, I don't want to drive my fourth back potentially for that ball to get out of the air. I either need to reset that ball, make it bounce, or just make sure it lands mid-court and it's not something they're going to get out of the air. So we can easily be sucked into a bang-bang rally, and the fourth shot is a great way, coming out of a timeout, to say, let's make our fourth shot bounce.
Right. And I also like the idea, you mentioned this a few shows ago, actually, that if you're stacking and the point exchanges aren't going the way you want them to, it could be a perfect time to think about switching the stack, even if it's not on paper. Like, you know, let's say you're playing mixed and you're normally on the left side during mixed. I think you mentioned you and, was it Kim, your partner, where Matias was shooting balls at her and it was so fast that she barely had any time to react to it. But you guys decided to switch. So now you are directly in front of Matias, and that was effective. You didn't win the game, but you
regrettably, we came to that decision too slowly.
It was too late.
That was the right move, and credit to Matias and Anna on their side. They were down, and they adopted a strategy of, we're going to drive the ball directly at Kim, and Matias is so skilled at doing that. The right move for us was, yes, to get her a little further away, but also to shorten his angle by getting her cross-court from him. It just took us too long to figure that out.
Well, obviously, there's strategic decisions on that first timeout. Let's say your first instinct and how you adapt to this deficit, maybe it isn't working as well as you'd like it to. So now maybe it's 8-3 or 8-2 or something like that. Let's call that second timeout. And this is where I like to disrupt. Can I show them something that we haven't showed them yet? And that could be, well, we've been playing their dinking game. Let's try a little shake and bake. Let's see if we can get a little more aggressive and see what that does. Let's try speeding up in certain ways. You do a lot of things in terms of off-ball movement and making them think about where they're going to hit the next shot.
One of the biggest compliments that has been offered to me, and I really appreciate it, and I think it comes from a collection of the multitude of different sports that I've played, is that I move off the ball well and that I cause a lot of disruption. So I'll come out of that timeout down 8-2 and I'll share with my partner, let's move our feet, let's have crisp footwork, and let's move off the ball. Let's give them something in their periphery that challenges them, that we're not just stationary and predictable. Let's be more unpredictable and just causing some distraction in their peripheral vision.
So you're faking like you're going to Ernie. You're poaching over the middle and then coming back. You're just doing things that are making them think about, oh, wait a second, it looks like they're going to be there for this shot. I have to go with this shot, and maybe that's not the shot they want to hit.
One of the best examples of it, and you know, bugs me when I see it, is if I'm the returner's partner, I'm the one lucky player that starts at the non-volley zone, whether we're stacking or not, I have to be faking. I have to be moving. I have to go toward the middle.
Yeah.
I've got to clog. I've got to protect my partner. Too many times that player is just stationary, or even worse, they hang out by the sideline.
Right. There's just a huge open gap in the middle.
Yeah, so hopefully most of our Florida Pro listeners are at least in the center of the box, but let's go ahead and get right in the center of the court
right.
a little bit, and then you either continue going after a go signal or you come back to where you were.
Especially when you play with a left-handed player or with a strong right-sided player that has a murdering two-handed backhand in the middle, but basically choosing an alpha before the beginning of the game. If there's a ball that's coming down the middle, let's default to you to take this ball. Unless discussed otherwise, unless they say you or whatever. Now, if that's not working and you're normally the left side player, you might have to release your ego a little bit to switch the other way. This, again, disrupts the court. It also gives your opponents different targets that they now have to hit. They have a completely different orientation of where they're going to try to hit the ball to, let's say, avoid your forehand or your partner's amazing two-handed backhand. So that idea of kind of releasing your ego and saying, look, if the goal is to win, let's try switching this and seeing if it helps more to make you the alpha on the rest of the points.
Yeah, and to sum that up just a little bit, because I think you explained it really well, is yeah, that may make you and your partner uncomfortable. But the bonus is it's probably going to make your opponents uncomfortable as well.
Right, right.
And we'll take that down 8-2. Let's make them uncomfortable. Let's have them come out of the timeout and see us in a very unpredictable setup. And that could lead to a really critical side out. And off we go.
Right. So I'm a guy that can fairly easily lose focus. Well, I shouldn't say it's fairly easy because this is something I've worked on pretty hard for the last year and a half. I'm better now than I was a year and a half ago of staying focused during a game where some casual players show up on the court next to you and they've got a speaker and they're having fun and just doing pickleball things. Man, I can't tell you how many times I've completely unraveled my focus because of that. And my game that was previously great goes into the wind. So I was reading a post from Dane Gingrich last year where he talked about, look, if you have a hard time staying focused, and in my case, I call this staying in the pocket, on the court, you just stare at the ground between the points. Just stay in your little compartment, sort of make a mental compartment for yourself. Keep high-fiving and staying positive with your partner, but don't lift your head and see what the rest of the world's doing. Like, really stay on that court within your little 5-foot radius and stay as focused as you can. I don't know what your on-court focus challenges are. Have you had them? Are you generally pretty focused as you play?
I'm generally focused. I haven't struggled as much with what you're describing, but what you're sharing brought to mind for me is what can I do to help my partner who may be struggling with something along those lines, or they're a little bit off. And like I've referenced before, I mean, there is a style of point where we win more rallies, but there's a personality of my partner that, you know, I can think of a couple that when I see their teeth, when they're smiling, when they're laughing, they play great pickleball.
Right.
And when they're just somber, it may not even be necessarily because we're losing. They're just not in the right frame of mind.
Yeah.
I'm looking for ways to pull their preferred personality out of them. And I expect that my partners are trying to do the same for me. I don't
right.
know what that is.
In those cases, I love to stay as positive as I can. I'm like, all right, let's break their hearts. I try to stay sort of half motivational speaker and half player on the court. And hopefully we're both like that. And we both keep boosting each other up and say, don't worry about it. If you miss that one, it's cool. Let's stay positive the whole time. I think that can be really helpful. So we've stayed positive. We've come back. We've broken their hearts. Now, let's say game three happens. Now we've had a tiebreaker. We're at game three. We're up 10-4. We cannot seem to close them out. We've all had our hearts broken 12-10. It's all happened. It's happened to every one of us listening to the show. Or worse in your case, 11-10.
NPL.
In NPL, you don't have to win by two. You just have to win by one. So I know you've had way too many games that were lost by that one point. It's a heartbreaker. Let's talk about how to stay in the game well enough that we can close some of these games out. First, for me, it's the importance of routine. I love to have my serve routine because in those weighty moments, I want to know exactly what to do. I do the same thing every single time. It allows me not to have to think about that one part of the game while the other things are swirling around in my head. So I like to stay focused and in my routine as I serve when we're at that level. Now, have I whacked a ball right into the net at 10-4? Absolutely. And have lost that game before. That has also happened. Again, terrible lessons learned. It's a thing that we all have to go through. But to me, that's effective to have a bit of routine. I've seen so many games end on someone missing a serve and then the next return you hit is long and that's the end of the game. And you go, that was great. That's fantastic. It was on our paddle when we blew it. And by we, I mean me. So I do like to have a routine for serving and hopefully for the return. And I think for you, the return is super important in terms of what happens with the next shot as well.
Let me add something to serve because we've talked about this before. It's an idea you share frequently on the show is don't be afraid to back up off the line.
Right.
At 10-4 serving, a couple hundred people watching, whatever it might be, I'm going to back up. I'm going to be darn close to the fence. I want to give myself some room to swing. I want to swing freely. And it's a great opportunity for wrapping the ball in what I like to call safety topspin. I don't want to push and guide and hope and pray on this serve that it will land in the court. I want to control it. I want to swing aggressively, not decelerate through the hitting zone or anything like that. So ample topspin and backing up off the line are a couple things I'm going to be thinking about at 10-4.
Part of those things where you do enough reps with that serve, you've hit 1,000 of them. This is something we can practice ourselves, guys. When it comes time that it really matters, you've done it enough times, you've had enough muscle memory to get that topspin. Maybe it's not on the baseline. Maybe you've given yourself a little safety margin because it's kind of a heavier moment. It's going in. You're not hitting it long. You're not drilling it into the net. You're giving yourself enough margin around the court.
And that's a bread and butter serve for me. But even if our listeners that you regularly prefer a low line drive. Let's say you come out of a timeout, you're up 10-4, you're trying to close this thing out. If you hit a high lofted serve with not a whole lot of pace on it, your opponents are just as nervous as you are. I mean, they're down match point. If they have to provide all of the energy into the ball, frequently that ball goes 2 feet long.
Right.
Or it goes into
the net.
They
try to rip it because it's they're
nervous. They have to fire a bunch of muscle groups sequentially, and it just doesn't work out for them.
Right.
So maybe don't give them a lot of pace. It's another option when you're up 10-4 trying to close it out. But another thing that's really critical for me when we're trying to close things out is not leave the third up to chance. I'm going to ask my partner rhetorically for both of us, where are we hitting this third? What are we going to do with our third? Let's talk about this before we serve.
Yeah.
Not surprisingly, because I embrace a new school third philosophy, and you have a great saying of make them hit, is we've got to make them hit a fourth ball. How many times have we done ourselves or we've seen a team trying to close out and they hit that third shot right into the net tape? They're going for that perfect third. They're under pressure. I'm not looking for a perfect third up 10-4. I want to make them hit a thigh-high volley.
Sure.
Volley that ball back into the midcourt. Now I can drop, then we can go from there. I may shake and bake at 10-4. Let's not rely on finesse under pressure. Let's go with some heat and some power to close this thing out.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning, we talked about it when you're coming back, but sometimes disruption when you're up and showing them something, showing the trick play that you haven't hit all game, could be a perfect time for that. Like, and a great example of that is when you're serving from the left side. We've talked about doing that short, slicey spin that goes off of the right side of the court. If they haven't seen that all match, maybe it's a good time to check it out. If you've got enough margin in your lead to have the balls to go for it.
You want to talk about cojones for a second. And I haven't seen this in a couple of years. Maybe it's because Lee Waters has been out of action. But Lee and Annalie, I don't know if you know this or remember this, when they would get up 10-4, 10-5, would regularly, they would serve. Let's say Lee was serving. Annalie would go stand up at the non-volley zone.
Yes.
As the serving team.
I've seen that. Yeah.
Which clearly means Annalie cannot hit the next ball.
Right.
So many times Lee would serve the ball, Annalie would stand there, and their opponents would hit the ball into the net.
They would try to rip it at her.
They
and go
didn't know what
feet
to
deep.
Do right. with it. I don't see that all that often, and I'm not necessarily suggesting it, but boy, that's a heck of a thing to have to look at.
It's a heck of a thing to have to look
4-10,
at.
And what do we do?
What do I do with this person here? They're not supposed to be there right there. I also like to think about how did we get here in the first place? It's so easy to start deconstructing your game as you're sitting at the service line, serving at 10-4 and going, what are we going to do with this? Well, think about how you got there. How'd you get to 10-4? What was the game plan to get you there? It's one of those things where, man, are points easier to win at the beginning of the game. You rail them right off, but man, they can be so hard when you're going back and forth and side out and side out and side out. When I played my first senior pro singles, I was in the consolation bracket, and we were 9-9 for 20 minutes. Full on. It was side out, side out, side out, side out, side out, side out. I ended up losing it, and the guy I was playing, I think he got third or fourth. All it made me think is, well, at least I deserve to be here. Like, I'm able to play with these dudes if we're 9-9 for 20 minutes. But, you know, mentally, I couldn't really close the game out, but it did feel like I was doing the right thing. How did I get there? Like, how did I get to 9-9? Why does it stop at that wall at that point?
So you ask a good question that sometimes the partners don't have a good answer to themselves. How did we get the lead in the first place? Mm. That's not a bad time for a trusted friend or somebody courtside. You've called a timeout. You've got the time. Sometimes it's great, even if it's not a coach, just go over there. And sometimes it's great to get the advice. You don't have to take the advice, but I would go over to that person and say, how did we get the lead in the first place?
Right. What did you see?
Like, what did you see that's working? And frequently, just that outside perspective, they're like, do you guys not realize that halfway through that game, you completely abandoned? No, we did not realize. Right, obviously, we didn't realize
it. Right.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah. Let's go finish this game up. So it's nice to have, even if it's not a professional coach, a trusted friend courtside when you're trying to close this thing out.
Yeah, I love that. And it's something that sort of plays into that releasing your ego a little bit. Like, how is this a blind spot? How am I not seeing the thing that got us here in the first place? So that makes tons of sense. We mentioned it when you're coming back, but it makes just as much sense not only to stay focused, but try to keep things light and stay really positive with each other. It's got to be a way that you guys go, all right, let's go. Let's just close this thing out. We've got it. Whatever your version of momentum is that you have to preserve, just continue that version, and I think you can close it out.
I find myself saying the word brochure a lot. I want to lift my partner up. I want them to feel good about themselves. And I'll say, did they not read the brochure on on your forehand?
You know, interesting.
Like, just pump them up, you know, a little bit. Like, just remind them, hey, you're all that.
Yeah.
And too bad for them for not, you know, reading the scouting report.
Like, right.
They don't want to do that to you. Why would they give you that
ball? Why would they give you a forehand? What, are they crazy?
Right.
Well, guys, I hope you take this advice and go win some more games and, more importantly, come back from others and break their hearts. That's probably a t-shirt. Let's break their hearts. As always, thank you guys for listening. You rock. Go out, play some pickleball. Have some fun. For Scott, I'm Michael. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.